Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here today to bring you our review of The Incredibles 2, which is brought to you by Fiberos. No sugar bombs on my watch.
Indeed, Pete, the latest Pixar offering. And I have to admit that when you proposed we go see this, now, of course, I'm not going to say no, because I'm hanging out with Pete time, a trip to the movies, etc. I was a little surprised. We tend not to attend these kind of movies together, but your fan radar was up. And I certainly don't want to suggest I went there with folded arms or anything like that, but maybe I'm a little biased, you know, all these Pixar sequels and whatnot, but this movie is a fun time at the movies. I don't think that the first movie is this kind of great, you know, it's not Finding Nemo, it's not Bambi, it's nothing like that, but this is a worthy sequel and a fun, fun movie.
This is the second best Fantastic Four movie ever made after Incredibles, the original, the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
And I appreciate that despite the long time in between the first movie and this, they literally pick up from what essentially was a tag scene at the end. You know, I don't think there was ever any real intention with the first one to say, oh man, I can't wait to see the Chronicles of the Underminer. but that's exactly where we pick up.
Right. You got John Ratzenberger in for his, you know, customary voice cameo at the very end of that first film, and then they put on their disguises and they go do the thing and we get the credits, and seemed like as logical a place to pick up. I know a lot of people have pointed out, 14 years later, you know, we keep falling into this trap of these long, long distances between films. But Matt, to the tune of $180 million, the film going public would grossly disagree.
No one projected that kind of box office opening. And that speaks to, I think I'll use Finding Nemo, Finding Dory as a bit of an analog. Such an emotional resonance with the first one, perhaps the best Pixar movie out there. And then to say sequel, first you go, okay, cash grab. But then you go, oh, wait, there's this other story that kind of happened behind the scenes that can be part sidequel, part sequel, and we can get the band back together for something new, something original. Same thing here with The Incredibles 2. I don't think I don't think the first one had the emotional resonance of, say, a Wall-E or something like that. But this movie delivers on the notion of a sequel. It builds on it. Pete, I got to get it out just because I grumbled it as we were leaving the movies, and I got to address it now. Thank goodness we have Mr. Brad Bird, who's able to write a sequel about what it's like to be a working woman and the challenges that a working woman has. Now that I've gotten that out, you know, kudos to him for writing a script that addresses, you know, the gender, which is not his, and all of that. I think it seemed to be a fairly well-rounded job, at least from my masculine perspective, but it was just nice to see these characters grow, and you had the home life, you had the superhero life, and it was a good time.
Mostly a superhero movie for the Me Too age, Matt, except I would argue, though Helen gets the spotlight and Elastigirl gets to go be the superhero while Bob, Mr. Incredible, stays at home and takes care of the kids, he arguably gets the more interesting storyline, what with Jack-Jack's powers manifesting and the drama back at the homestead.
You know, I was watching the movie, and it had been a while since I saw the first one, and I had forgotten that we, the audience, knew that Jack-Jack had all these powers, but that the family did not. And I kept saying to myself, but there was something in the first movie other than Jack-Jack with the bad guy, and there's this deleted scene where he's with the babysitter, which, to be fair, is a deleted scene. I think it since has been released as kind of like a short or something like that, but it's not part of the official movie, so of course you kind of don't have the babysitter by implication saying, oh, he turned into this, he turned into that. And from that little deleted scene, you get this wonderful subplot and just this really fantastic character that I think drives a lot of the comedy in the movie, in a movie that is not necessarily built for a ton of comedy. Otherwise, what with mom's away at work and the daughter's had her social life, quote unquote, ruined, and dad is overwhelmed in a traditionally maternal role and so forth. Jack-Jack gives you that comedy.
Yeah. And apart from the fact that he's just so darn cute with the babble and everything else, and then you bring in Edna Mode, who is best used in such small bits, but really brings the wry humor, and it's a winning formula 14 years later.
Yes, such an iconic character, coincidentally voiced by Brad Bird. Mm-hmm. The story, of course, in the first one, he did the temp track, and they never could surpass, you know, with a voice actor. Also, you get some directorial flourish there, but great character. And honestly, I kind of like the I like the dispelling of expectations. You know, Edna Mode, the spouseless couple, you know, or partnerless, childless person who is able to just off screen effortlessly handle not just a baby, but a super powered baby, like no problem for overnight. Like,
right.
It's kind of like it's faintly funny. Or it's, I don't know. I love the humor of it, that she's a really great, really, really great parent for 18 hours and you don't need to see any of it.
Yeah, I think that completely sells it. And listen, the movie doesn't have a ton going on. It's a fairly straightforward story, what with the misdirection of screenslaver pizza guy. Okay. And obviously Catherine Keener's villain there. But I think the way that they are able to construct the story and just have it be this understated thing that Edna Mode can handle the baby, that they bond, really the last character you would ever expect to bond with a baby, as she outfits it and you know, pinch hits for Mr. Incredible, who can't get his stuff together around this child.
I think you're right that it's a fairly straightforward story. I mean, my initial suspicion as the superhero community is being helped by Winston Deaver, initially I was suspecting it was him, and then it was like, well, that's a little direct.
Right.
Oh, wait. Second on my list is the sister Evelyn, you know. Yes. So I don't think this certainly is not, you know, this is not some great surprise here. But again, I mean, you know, it's a PG-rated Pixar movie meant for the family. I'm sure that there were kids that were just blown away. In fact, you know, I mean, there were kids at the showing we went to, you know, who were laughing at some of the silly stuff, where I think you and I were certainly smiling or chuckling, but right. It was like, they were just going bonkers. Jack-Jack is still shooting lasers out of his eyes or whatever. And it was like, hey, this movie plays for the whole family. This plays for people, you know, across a whole bunch of ages. And that was a nice thing to see too.
It does. And I think, you know, when we talk about Winston Deaver, voice actor Bob Odenkirk, you know, Better Call Saul, and, you know, so many comedic roles, I think that's where you're wise to keep him there and have him do this, you know, used car salesman job as a billionaire. And then Evelyn, you suspected her from the start. And what do you know, she's the screenslaver, and she gets the upper hand, which obviously the children have to come and bail them out from.
I will just mention, I was certainly not offended, but I was a tad surprised at, you know, there were a couple of hells in there. There were a couple of, was it crap or something like that? There was a little language where I was like, you know, I don't have a problem my kids seeing language like that in the movies. Might some parents be a bit surprised? You know, maybe. That said, you know, 2018, a couple of hells or a couple of dams, not the worst thing in the world. More interesting, I thought, Pete, was some of the discussion, not just online, but then back to HQ, Disney HQ, and back out to the theaters again with some of the flickering presented in the movie, and how those who are particularly sensitive might be at risk of an epileptic reaction.
I didn't make note of it as we were watching it, but seeing the discussion over the weekend, I was like, oh yeah, okay. So there was no mention. I mean, these things are checked for that. There's various tests that they run ahead of time, you know, not to be trusting of a massive corporate conglomerate in Disney, Matt, but I can't imagine they would not have run, particularly Pixar, you know, with their family-friendly tech background, not have run a check beforehand.
Yeah, I know I saw a reference online that the, and I'm certainly not proficient in some of the seizure safety check lingo here, but there is a seizure safety check called the Harding FPA. Yes. And the estimate was that the flashing was at 3 hertz and that you might trigger an epileptic reaction at 16 hertz. So it seems if there was the check in place, as I assume is the case for all movies or anytime there's something kind of flashy, you're going to just do the due diligence. It seems like it passed that check. I will say, you know, I think it's probably due diligence. You want to print out a 1-page, you know, 30-point font saying Incredibles 2 has some flashing scenes. You know, parents should be aware. You want to print that out and put it by your ticket booth. It does no harm to do that. And certainly the awareness of it to make sure it's safe for everybody, that's fine too.
And again, it's been noticed by the public and word of mouth has spread. I've since seen images of signs put up in theaters. So I think crisis averted. We certainly haven't heard any reports of actual, you know, epileptic issues spawned as a result of this. So would seem they've avoided it. Matt, I want to talk real quick, recasting for the sequel here, obviously because of the hand of fate, Rick Dicker's voice from the original, that of Bud Lucky, something of a good luck charm for Pixar films. He also worked on Winnie the Pooh, Toy Story 3, and they recast him for the sequel posthumously with Jonathan Banks, another Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul alum, and I thought it was seamless.
Yeah, if you need to recast the iconic Bud Lucky, as indeed, you know, the end came to him as it does for all. I mean, Jonathan Banks, certainly a very, very fitting replacement. In fact, as I was watching, I was saying, you know, he sounds a little different, but the flip side is I could not place Jonathan Banks' voice, and I've seen enough of his work to, you know, to know his voice and know him well enough. So I guess that's all, you know, all in the performance, all in the character there. Pete, we would be remiss, particularly given the long history of discussing composer Michael Giacchino, we would be remiss, A, to not say it's a wonderful score. We're back at that kind of, you know, mid-century jazz orchestra kind of thing. But are you ready to hear some of these Giacchino titles for Incredibles 2?
Absolutely.
Now, I will say, people who know Giacchino, normally every single track has a cornball name to it. Not the case here. Maybe he's slowed down in middle age. But let's see. Let's choose one here, Pete. We have Train of Taut. let's see. We have Searching for a Screenslaver. That's kind of punny. Helen of Ploy.
That's not bad.
Okay, Pete, you know Giacchino always does World's Worst. What's the worst?
Babysitter.
World's Worst Babysitters, plural.
And not having looked at the track list there. So there you go.
There's, of course, the character Dash, so a dash of reality. Hydro foiled again.
Ooh.
That's maybe the most cringeworthy slash good.
Near to my heart.
A Bridge to Par, two R's.
Nice.
Let's do one more here. Happily After Divorce.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And of course, it ends with In Credits 2, which is just a carryover from the first one. So a Giacchino joint, a Ratzenberger joint, a Pixar joint. I guess, Pete, one other thing to mention, definitely a moment where people in the know in the credits, third or fourth credit there, John Lasseter. Not too many movies left that are going to have his credit on there because of his own, well, I was going to call it woes. That probably undersells it. The fact that he's a creepy, grabby guy.
Yeah, a hugger, someone who's made people super uncomfortable at Pixar, who is, he's done. And this seems all too common lately, and thank goodness we're getting people who their behavior in positions of power, abusive, offensive, out of the way. And, you know, that we can have artists who don't seem to make people uncomfortable continue their work.
Yeah, you know, a hugger. There's also talk of, you know, grabbing the thigh. I mean, luckily none of it at the worst level of things that we've seen, but also none of it acceptable either. He has the rather ignominious, you know, kind of Hollywood quiet post-action firing. You know, he went on hiatus for reflection, and then now he's he'll be consulting until the end of the year, at which time
but
he's
not
going to...
with space at Pixar. They made that very, very, you know, notable in the release. So yeah, he's a phone call away if you need him. And I think that's all for the best.
It's the BS Hollywood firing where they don't want to commit to, they don't want to say a firing because then that looks bad. It's going to be the write off into the sunset. Oh, did you forget yet? You know, Pete, but I digress. Back to Incredibles 2 proper here. This is, as I said before, a super fun movie, 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and, you know, A+ cinema score. And I think that's because even though it's not the great animated classic of our age, it's not the Snow White of 2018, you have a great time at the movies with good guys and bad guys and good gals and bad gals and stuff you can relate to with family stuff. And it delivers across all of those.
I just dig this era they kind of carved out, and the music as the touchstone for that, the kind of art deco nouveau thing they have going on with the buildings and how grand the spaces are and how multifunctional. If I had one complaint though, Matt, I didn't get enough Frozone. I still need my Frozone.
I mean, I give them credit for giving more Frozone than the first movie. I mean, you could have had more. And I know there even, it was like, there was discussion about showing his wife, but it was funnier to not have her. You could have had, like, gone to the trouble to animate, you know, another black character into the movie, if only just to be like,
right,
whatever it is she's saying off screen, you know, hey, dinner's ready. No, I just got to step out. You know, I mean, whatever. If that's the biggest quibble that we have, that Samuel L. Jackson doesn't have a big enough part in this movie that he's in, I'll take it. That's a nice problem to have, because he is in it. Frozone plays an important role in it, a bigger role than the last one, and it's all working.
Since we've fallen into, for lack of a better term, this trope where the kids are bailing the parents out, what better way to bring in Honey, to bring in Mrs. Best, Miss Frozone, for a potential third film, than have her be the one to kind of, you know, quarterback the kids when the parents are in trouble, and we can finally see her subvert some expectations and, you know, have her in a leadership role.
Well, you know what, Pete? All the more reason. Let's get Incredibles 3 going. Let's not wait 14 years in between them. Cause,
please, no.
Because then you're going to have to be, you know, recasting more than just the oldest guy. So... I know I started this podcast out by saying, oh, Pete wants to go see the Pixar sequel that they made to sell plushies and t-shirts and to do the incredible baby dash in Tomorrowland at the Magic Kingdom. That all might be true, but it was a solid movie at the core, you know, which was the problem with Eisner. Let's just make a movie quick, print t-shirts. Instead, this was, are we ready to make this movie? We are. Okay, hey, the movie's ready to come out. Now let's print the t-shirts. So it all worked. Let's get that in there. And yeah, nice to see Brad Bird back directing a movie, by the way. I have to say, Pete, I have to make a correction, not to the podcast audience, but to you. I had mixed up Brad Bird and Andrew Stanton, both, of course, Pixar directors, both of whom have gone on to do live action, some of which has failed spectacularly. Brad Bird, after Ratatouille, did Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, big hit, then went on to do Tomorrowland, colossal failure. I confused it a little bit with John Carter, directed by Andrew Stanton, an even bigger failure. But now, just here we are, what, 3 years after Tomorrowland, Incredibles 2. It all works out in the end, Pete.
It does, and the film soars, and let's hope that the strength of this box office will certainly convince them to get going on a sequel sooner rather than later.
Maybe The Incredibles 3 meet Han Solo animated?
Let's just keep it to The Incredibles.
Well, Pete, it is always great talking the movies here on the Pop Culture Podcast. I know that, let's see, ahead of us, we have more Cloak and Dagger. We have Luke Cage. My goodness, Pete, Luke Cage just in a couple of days.
Yes.
What's the next movie that we'll be going to see, though?
We just picked up our Ant-Man and the Wasp tickets, so we will be bringing you that the weekend of July 6th. So be on the lookout for that as the Marvel Cinematic Universe continues to move forward.
Well, we certainly look forward to hearing feedback on all this stuff, on Incredibles, on Cloak and Dagger, on Luke Cage, on more MCU stuff, etc., etc. Pete, how can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J-K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,011 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast anytime you like. Comment at FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram where we are Fantastic Geek. Email FantasticGeek@gmail.com. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
To those of you, to all of you listening on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, upcoming this weekend, Cloak and Dagger and Luke Cage. It's all Marvel all the time as Disney slowly takes over all our brains. With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final Incredibles 2 word.
All over Dusseldorf. Doozles are dozing. Their eyelids are heavy. They're drooping.